Mr. Matthews, let's start with the fact that you are never going to admit that you murdered Sharon, correct?
No, sir.
All right. So let's just get that out of the way to begin with.
Dallas County Prosecutor Jason Fine immediately appeared to be frustrated as he began to cross-examine his defendant.
Yesterday, you told us your third story about what happened to Sharon, correct?
I need to explain that to her.
No, if there's something that needs to be explained, your attorney will do it on redirect. There's going to be some questions where I'll let you explain possibly, but if I ask you one that requires a yes or no, I expect you to answer with a yes or no. Do you understand that?
Yes, sir.
The defendant was 39-year-old Wesley Matthews. He had been charged with capital murder and tampering with evidence. But surprisingly, right before trial was set to begin, in June 2019, he pleaded guilty to a lesser charge. As a result, the more serious charges were dropped. It was now up to the jury to decide his fate as the trial continued. But after Wesley's testimony on direct, in which he claimed it had all been a tragic accident, prosecutor Jason Fine was clearly not buying it. He believed Wesley had committed murder.
You caused her death by your own plea of guilt, correct?
That is correct.
All right. That's what you said. You understand what I think about this, correct?
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, I think you murdered her, so let's get that straight, all right?
That's your opinion, sir.
It is my opinion.
In today's episode, we're going to look into what happened to 3-year-old Sharon Matthews. It's a case that a lot of my listeners have asked me to cover, and so today, I'm hoping to do it justice. As always with these kinds of cases, especially ones with such a young victim, I'll leave out any unnecessary details and only give you the facts so that you know what happened and how this played out in a courtroom. Still, listener discretion is advised. This is Jillian, and in partnership with Law and Crime, you are listening to Court Junkie, episode 163. I am no artist, or graphic designer, or designer of any kind. So anytime I would try to put together a cute Instagram story or make a cool graphic for a post, I was lost. But then I found Canva Pro, and now I feel like I can design something that looks like I do have that designer eye, even though I don't. Canva Pro is the easy-to-use design platform that has everything you need to design like a pro. It's a quick, easy, and affordable way to design whatever you need. No matter what you're creating and sharing, Canva Pro has everything you need in one place, including a collection of over 75 million premium photos, videos, audio, and graphics. Like I said, my favorite part about Canva Pro is how easy it is to make an Instagram story look great, especially if you're in marketing and are in charge of social media, or if you have your own business or venture. There's no idea too big or too small for Canva Pro. So whether you're a law student, a lawyer, work in the forensics field, you're a mom, you're a dad, whatever you do, Canva Pro can help you with all of your design needs. I think you'll love it because it's easy to use and works great. Design like a pro with Canva Pro. Right now, you can get a free 45-day extended trial when you use my promo code. Just go to canva.me/court to get your free 45-day extended trial. That's canva.me/court. canva.me/court. It's time for some straight talk. Let's face it, tax returns could look a little different for a lot of people this year. But you're still going to get a lot of noise in your ear about how you should spend it. So when the big carriers start trying to get you to splurge on the latest nonsense, just tune it out and only spend it on what makes you happy. With Straight Talk Wireless, you can get a Samsung Galaxy A51 for just $199, so you can listen to your favorite music wherever you go. Plus, get the $45 unlimited talk, text, and data plan with no contract on America's best networks for up to 50% less. Come on, start the year on a high note. Tune out the nonsense and tune in to Straight Talk Wireless. Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. It was Saturday, October 7th, 2017, and Richardson police officer Jeremy Savage had just settled into work when the first call of his shift came over the radio. The call was for a missing child, 3-year-old Sharon Matthews. And at this point, Sharon had been missing for hours. Although it was a little after 8 a.m., her father, Wesley Matthews, told the dispatcher that he last saw her around 3 a.m.
So it's a serious call in that we have a 3-year-old child that's missing. We have a 5-hour time lapse in time where the child was last seen until reported. So it's a serious call, and we responded quickly.
Officer Savage headed over to the Matthews home. Wesley answered the door, wearing blue jeans and a black and blue striped polo shirt. His cell phone was in his hand.
Hi, sir. It's Officer Savage with the Richardson Police Department. Missing the son or daughter? It's a daughter. Okay.
Officer Savage took Wesley outside and asked him to show him where he last saw his daughter.
Sir, if you could show me where you put your last seen your daughter.
They walked through a gated yard and opened the gate. Officer Savage followed as Wesley led him down a driveway, then turned down what looked like a narrow street. Wesley then pointed to some trees about 30 yards away.
You put her where?
There. Yeah.
That's the last place you saw her was by these trees over here. And this was 3 o'clock in the morning.
Other officers had arrived at the scene, and it seemed to be hard for them to hide their disbelief at what Wesley was telling them. He said that at around 3 a.m., he took Sharon outside as punishment for not drinking her milk. He told her to stand near the trees outside the backyard until she finished. When he went back 15 minutes later to check on her, she was gone. As for why he didn't immediately call the police, he said he had started walking around looking for her and that his wife was still sleeping. Officer Savage was concerned, to say the least.
A little bit of panic, a little bit of concern, all ran through my mind.
Officers did a walkthrough of the home.
During the search of the house, he followed me around the house instead of leading me through a house, which you would expect if that was your house. So I was looking at the video now, it looks like I'm frantically looking through the house, and he's just kind of following me around.
So you're the one who's frantic, and what is the defendant's demeanor like?
Very, very calm and of no showing no remorse, concern for his daughter.
An additional search of the home would reveal that there were clothes in the washing machine and in the dryer. Laundry had recently been done. Officer Savage would later think to himself, if you were searching for your child, you wouldn't be doing laundry. But finding Sharon was the top priority on the responding officers' minds. Wesley's wife, Sini, gave them a photo of Sharon, and so they started to canvass the neighborhood, knocking on doors. An Amber Alert was issued. Little did anyone know, they wouldn't have to look very far. On July 14th, 2014, a beautiful baby girl was born in Gaya, Bihar, India. For reasons we may never know, she was abandoned soon after and lived in an orphanage. In July 2016, the now little girl was adopted by a couple from the United States, Wesley and Sini Matthews. They named her Sharon Susan Matthews and brought her home to Richardson, Texas, where they had a 4-year-old biological daughter as well. Sharon lived with the Matthews family until that day in October 2017, when Wesley called the police to tell them she had gone missing. Later that day, on October 7th, Wesley was brought into the police station for an interview. Erring on the side of caution, Detective Victor Diaz read him his Miranda rights, which he waived.
He said that on Friday, October the 6th, they were getting ready for bed. It was about 10 p.m. Sini, Wesley, and Sharon all sleep in the master bedroom. She is accurate. Told her she needed to drink her milk. He went back inside, short time later, came back out. She hadn't drank the milk. He placed her on the east side of the at 5 a.m. when Sini wakes up and confronts him.
In the interview, Detective Diaz asked Wesley about the adoption process and about Sharon. Wesley told them Sharon had some medical issues, including trouble with eating.
It sounded like he was upset that he got duped and got a girl that had some medical issues, and he was promised a girl that was going to be in good health. And that's pretty much what I got from that.
Detective Diaz told Wesley his story doesn't really make sense, but Wesley insisted he was telling the truth. Detective Diaz asked if anything happened in the house. He said no.
Was there an accident that happened?
No,
sir. That you took her somewhere?
No, sir.
Then why can't the canine dogs pick up a trout in the field by the tree? Why can't they pick up her scent by the tree? There's no evidence she was ever by the tree.
Did she go under the water in the bath?
No.
She didn't fall in the water in the bath and you go in there and she drowned?
No. She was sleeping.
She was sleeping in the bath?
She was trying to sleep.
Trying to sleep in the bathtub?
In the crib.
In the crib.
What happened in the house? Because that's where this happened. This happened in the house. There's no evidence she was by the tree. And we were ready to spell it out by having our canine look through that.
Sir, that
these are special dogs that are specifically trained for this purpose.
The scent. There's
that's
no,
what they do.
There's no odor of Sharon out by the tree.
There is. She is by the
tree. I'm telling you there's not.
There's not.
There's not. They've already checked. They've checked. It's
I don't know how true your statements are. I don't think they have checked.
I'm telling you that they have.
They have.
No, sir.
We've been going at this for a couple of hours.
I know.
We're in this room and doing, talking. There's people doing stuff outside. We're not BSing you, okay? We're not trying to yank your chain, Wesley.
Yes, sir.
All right? I'm not trying to get a conviction because I get a freaking toaster at the end of the month, all right? I want the truth, Wesley.
Yes, sir.
That's what I want, okay?
And the truth is what
and
I
the truth is not what you told me, Wesley, because nothing is being able to produce to support your account of what happened.
Wesley told them the dogs weren't accurate, and he told the detectives that they weren't doing enough to find his daughter. The interview lasted for about 4 hours. Afterwards, they arrested Wesley and charged him with abandoning or endangering a child, based on what he had told them, about leaving Sharon outside in the middle of the night by herself.
And you don't know it at the time, but at 12:01 and 53 seconds on October 7th, 2017, as he's telling you that he doesn't know what happened, nothing happened in the house, everything is true, Sharon is laying in a culvert half a mile from their home, correct?
Yes.
For the following 15 days, searches were organized in the community. The investigation into Sharon Matthews' disappearance intensified, and the national media took notice. On Sunday, October 22nd, Christina Drury, a canine handler and registered nurse, was out searching the area with her rescue dog, Stella. Stella was trained to give an indication if she detected an odor of decomposition. Much to everyone's surprise, Stella alerted in a culvert about a half mile from the Matthews home.
And when we turned around to look at her, she was in a down with her nose pinpoint straight into the culvert. Didn't look at me, didn't look at anybody else. She wasn't going to budge for anything. And that is her official indication that she has found human remains.
Her body was badly decomposed, so much so that the medical examiner would be unable to perform an internal autopsy.
I'll tell you guys right now, we will never be able to know exactly how Sharon died. We will never know exactly how she died because of the defendant.
The medical examiner did, however, list the manner of death as a homicide and the cause of death as homicidal violence. After Sharon's body was found, Wesley was again taken for an interview with detectives. Again, he waived his Miranda rights. But this time, he had an attorney by his side, as well as a different story about what happened to Sharon.
talking about what had happened, and he basically said that on October 7th in the morning, he's in the garage. Sharon won't drink her milk. He's helping her drink the milk when she starts to choke. She starts to choke and choke to the point where he checks and she didn't have a pulse. Her eyes rolled back, and her hands and feet are getting cold. He's rubbing her back to try to warm her up, and he realizes that she's passed.
He said Sharon had choked on her milk and that he didn't know what to do. He admitted to putting her body in the culvert, saying he pushed her in as far as she could go. At the end of this interview, officers charged him with injury to a child by omission. A charge of capital murder would later be added. Wesley's wife, Sini Matthews, was arrested a few weeks later and charged with child endangerment. In their investigation, officers had discovered that the day prior to Sharon's disappearance, the family had gone out to eat at a restaurant without Sharon. While they had ordered food for themselves, including food for their 4-year-old daughter, according to receipts, nothing was ordered for Sharon, who had been left at home by herself. After their arrests, the couple's 4-year-old daughter was removed from the home and placed into foster care. Seventy percent of people say they want to use natural products, but only 2% do. Why? Because what they sell at the store is from the biggest companies, not necessarily the ones that are best for you. So where do you start? Introducing Grove Collaborative. Grove is the online marketplace that delivers healthy home, beauty, and personal care products directly to you. Grove Collaborative takes the guesswork out of going green. You can browse the site for thousands of home, beauty, and personal care products, all guaranteed to be good for you, your family, your home, and the planet. Grove carries some big names you might know, like Mrs. Myers, but they also have their own line of products too. So I've always been kind of intrigued by essential oils, and I found that Grove has their own ultrasonic diffuser with essential oils, so I couldn't pass that up. It's like a white ceramic top with a light wooden base, and it lights up in different colors as it diffuses. My daughter and I love it. With Grove, you don't have to shop multiple stores or search endlessly online to get all the natural goods you need for you and your family. Join over 2 million households who have trusted Grove Collaborative to make their homes happier and healthier. Plus, shipping is fast and free on your first order. Making the switch to natural products has never been easier. For a limited time, when my listeners go to grove.co/court, you will get to choose a free gift with your first order of $30 or more, but you have to use our special code. Go to grove.co/court to get your exclusive offer. That's grove.co/court. Finding the right program to help your child learn to read can be daunting. You have to find something that's both engaging and proven to get results. Hooked on Phonics has been the most trusted program to help kids learn to read for nearly 35 years, which is why I decided to get a jump start and check out their program for my daughter. We recently got the Learn to Read Early Emergent Readers Kit for pre-K, made specifically for 3- and 4-year-olds. My daughter is turning 3 in just a few weeks, so she's definitely on the younger side, but she was thrilled when our reading kit came in the mail. Not only are there storybooks with pictures that she just loves, but there's also stickers and flashcards too. And there's an app. I cannot wait to see how her reading is going to progress as the months go on. Hooked on Phonics is the Learn to Read curriculum that uniquely combines an amazing app with hands-on learning materials shipped to your home every month. With Hooked on Phonics, you get unlimited access to their powerful reading app, along with workbooks that give your child essential hands-on practice to reinforce the skills they're building in the app. Plus, you get storybooks written specifically to build your child's confidence and discussion questions to increase reading comprehension. Lessons take just 20 minutes or less, and the curriculum is guaranteed to help your child learn to read. Give your child the confidence that reading brings with Hooked on Phonics. Visit hookedonphonics.com/court and receive your first month for just $1. That's hookedon, P-H-O-N-I-C-S.com/court to get your first month of Hooked on Phonics for just $1. HookedOnPhonics.com/court. As I said earlier, right before Wesley's trial was set to begin, he ended up pleading guilty to the lesser charge of injury to a child causing serious bodily injury. But the trial would still continue, as the jury would now have to decide his fate. Would he get something as minimal as probation, or would he be facing life in prison? Prosecutor Jason Fine started out by telling the jury that they would be getting to know a little girl named Sharon Matthews. He called her a sweet, adorable, fun-loving little girl. He told the jury about what Wesley initially told the police, how he had placed her outside and she went missing.
And you're going to know that what he said on October 7th was a lie. It's one of many lies that he told.
He said it was a lie that caused everyone to spend 15 tireless days looking for Sharon.
All the while, the defendant knew exactly where she was.
He told the jury he can't tell them how she died, that her body was in a state of decomposition that was so bad the medical examiner couldn't perform an internal autopsy. He pointed out that had Wesley called the police immediately, they would have a cause of death. Prosecutor Fine said that after the body was recovered, Wesley had a new story.
And his new story is that he's in the garage with Sharon, again, trying to get her to drink this milk. It's all centered around milk. 3 o'clock in the morning, she takes a big sip of milk. She chokes and dies right there. And y'all are going to get to decide if that makes any sense or if that's a reasonable explanation whatsoever. He says that he then takes Sharon's body, puts it into a trash bag, puts the trash bag with Sharon's body in the back of his SUV with other trash, drives around Richardson looking for a place to dump Sharon. He decides on that culvert, which is about a half a mile from his house eventually. He crawls into the culvert, places Sharon's body feet first into the culvert, takes the trash bag off, puts her feet first in the culvert on her back. And this is corroborated by exactly how she was found on October 22nd.
He said he anticipates that the defense will say it was all a horrible accident. They'll point out that Wesley has no criminal record, and no witnesses will say he ever abused Sharon. They're right, he said.
But this persona to the outside world, this facade, we're going to break down for y'all. And you're going to see evidence of who Wesley Matthews really is. And by the end of this trial, you will know who he is. Not the persona, but who he really is.
He warned the jury that it's going to be a horrific trial to sit through, that they will hear things and see photos that will not go away. But that's the reality of what happened to Sharon, and it's because of him, he said. He told them their sole job is to assess punishment, from probation to life in prison. When looking at the nature of the crime, Wesley's action and character, and the victim, Sharon Matthews, he said they will be left with only one just verdict, a life sentence. Wesley's attorney, Rafael de la Garzas, began by saying, there's two sides to every coin. He said Wesley will testify and tell the jury exactly what took place, the lies, the poor decisions he made, and the enormous regret he now has.
But you will also know that he has accepted responsibility for what he has done and what he was guilty for. Injury to a child by omission, by not calling 911. He is going to tell you how he thinks about that day, every single minute of his life.
He said Wesley wishes that he had woken his wife up, but that he instead tried to save Sharon himself by giving her CPR. He said Wesley feels like a failure that he couldn't save his daughter that he chose and adopted. He told the jury that they'll see videos from October 2015, from when Wesley and his father went to India and met this beautiful little girl for the first time. He called it a journey of love, sacrifice, tears, and joys with this child. He said he's asking the jury to take things into consideration and determine what is fair and just. He said he has all the confidence in the world that the jury will do the right thing. The prosecution first introduced witnesses who had been working with Sharon in therapy leading up to her death. Nikki Darifone was one of the first witnesses to take the stand for the state. She's a speech-language therapist at Children's Health, and Sharon was one of her clients. She testified that Sharon came to her starting in January 2017 for speech and language therapy. Later, the Matthews added on therapy for feeding and swallowing.
She is the sweetest little girl, just very happy and always smiled. You know, of course, initially when she met me, she was shy, but after building a rapport, she usually would come back to the therapy room, and I just remember her smile. She's just a sweet little girl.
She said they wanted to increase the amount of words she was using and get her to be able to identify nouns and verbs, as well as learn how to follow a set of directions. She told the court that Sharon did great and continually improved. By her six-month evaluation, she had achieved all her goals and was discharged from that portion of therapy. She said Sharon's mom, Sini, had expressed concerns about Sharon's poor intake and difficulty for her to eat, which is why they added feeding therapy. She was asked if this feeding difficulty was common in kids Sharon's age. Sharon was 2.5 at the time. She said yes. When asked if Sharon ever choked during her feeding sessions, she said no. She could recall when Sharon didn't like something and she may have gagged, but never choked. As for whether there could have been something wrong with her swallowing or anything like that, she said as part of their evaluation, they took a closer look into Sharon's mouth. She said Sharon demonstrated functional, age-appropriate skills with regards to chewing, and she saw nothing to indicate any issues with swallowing. She said Wesley and Sini would both attend sessions, taking turns. She didn't notice anything out of the ordinary with them. Prosecutor Fine asked if she would ever recommend force-feeding milk to your child at 3 a.m. She said no, that's not something she would ever recommend. On cross, she was asked if there were times Sharon was a challenge to get to comply, but not in a bad way. She said yes. She was then asked if she had to put in a lot of patience and a lot of effort when dealing with Sharon, and she said correct. But on redirect, prosecutor Jason Fine said, "Well, that's part of parenting, right? Effort and patience?" "I would say so, yes," she responded. Amber Neville is a physical therapist who also worked with Sharon on her gross motor skills. She, too, described Sharon to the jury.
Sharon came to us, and when we all first met her, we said, "Oh, she looks like a little baby doll," because she was very tiny and petite. And all the kids we work with are cute, but she was extra cute, and we immediately were like lucky to have her. She was walking by the time she came to see me for the first physical therapy appointment. So when we do that first treatment session, we just kind of get to know them. There's a lot of play involved in what we do. All of the strengthening and those kinds of things are all geared around activities that the kids like. So she was, yeah.
She testified that she first started seeing Sharon in August 2016. She had just turned 2. Her walk still looked like that of a new walker, she said, and so they worked on her gait pattern. She said Sharon was shy and had movement insecurities. She worked with her until towards the end of December 2016. She said Sharon was making great progress. On cross, she said she gave homework to Sharon's parents so they could work with her at home, She said she could tell there was improvement and that her parents had been working with her on it. Lindsay Walker was another physical therapist who worked with Sharon. She called Sharon a joy to work with. She was asked if Wesley ever attended her sessions, and she recalled him waiting in the waiting room, and that was it. She was asked if Sharon had missed more appointments than what she would like to see. She said yes.
So we, when we evaluate a child, we recommend a frequency or a plan of care. So initially for Sharon, that was once a week. Once she started making progress, we were able to drop it off to once a month, and that was in May that we did that. But between when I first started seeing her in January until May, it was recommended that she should come once a week, and I believe I need to look at my notes, but I believe it was eight. She came eight times during that time frame.
Eight times during essentially five and a half months.
Exactly. Yes.
She said by the time Sharon was discharged, she was able to jump and climb stairs on her own. The only goal she hadn't met was running, but she was well on her way at a fast walk. Detective Victor Diaz was called to the stand to talk about the specifics of their investigation into Sharon's death. He described how he first got a call about the case from his sergeant.
He told me there was a five-hour delay in the report of the missing child, and that the caller, Wesley Matthews, called the non-emergency number, not 911.
Let's start right there. Two things you brought up. Five-hour delay. What is significant in that? With a missing child, you wait 5 hours to alert any authorities?
It just throws up a red flag. I've never had a situation like that before where there was a long delay with a three-year-old child missing.
And then after 5 hours, you called the non-emergency line. Explain to the jury, what non-emergency versus 911. What are we talking about there?
Again, another red flag. If you call 911, a 911 operator will answer, whether it's Dallas, Garland, Richardson, Plano, and they can transfer you to the correct operator if your call's routed to a different agency. By calling non-emergency means that you had to look that number up, figure out what the non-emergency line was, and call that line, which goes to the same dispatcher.
He said he listened to Wesley's call to the police and that it sounded like someone reporting a missing item, not a missing child. The fact that Wesley was calm when he responded was definitely a red flag for him, too.
What are you feeling? What's going through your mind, the adrenaline? Just describe that to the jury.
As we're searching the house for Sharon, of course, the back of my mind is thinking, what if this is something more? So I'm trying to pay attention to what's in the house, but my concern is also just locating Sharon at that point. And I think Officer Savage had the same reaction as I.
Would you agree that yourself and the rest of the Richardson officers and other officers who were looking for Sharon had a sense of urgency?
Yes.
Did you sense any of that sense of urgency from the defendant?
No. At several points, as we were doing the search of the residence, he just appeared to be following us rather than helping actually look.
He said to get to the backyard, you had to go through the laundry room. He remembered seeing the light on the washer. One of the officers opened it and looked inside. There was a very small load of wet clothes. After a consent search of the home, he said they took a laptop and clothes that appeared to be Sharon's, covered in vomit and thrown in the trash. Also in their investigation, they recovered video from a house across the railroad tracks. The home security camera, which was facing the Matthews residence, was activated all night by a spider spinning a web on it. At 4:19 a.m. on October 7th, the camera captured a vehicle backing out of the Matthews driveway. At 4:53 a.m., the vehicle backed into the driveway, back to the house. Investigators also found video of that car driving along the route Wesley said he took when hiding her body. Detective Diaz said they took a lot of swabs from the house and the Matthews cars, looking for forensic evidence like blood evidence, but that nothing came to fruition. With Detective Diaz still on the stand, the prosecution introduced text messages between Wesley and his wife, Sini, from February 8, 2017. This was about 8 months prior to Sharon's death. During this time, Sini had taken Sharon to the hospital for infections in her shoulder. She was texting her husband updates. Sini tells him that they did a urine culture and that Sharon will be starting antibiotics. Wesley says okay, and then says, "Tell the doc we can't admit. Got another little girl to care for. We can come back tomorrow for follow-up labs." Sini responds that she doesn't think it's a choice, quote, "because he said she is lethargic." Wesley offers to trade places with her so Sini can be with their other daughter. Sini says she will see how it goes, but that she really can't be away from their other daughter. Then she says, "Nurse said white blood count is really high. Septic joint confirmation." Sini then texts Wesley and tells him that they had an x-ray done on Sharon. Wesley asks why, and she says they felt like doing it. Wesley then tells Sini to watch movies so she isn't bored. A little later, Sini writes, "In ultrasound now with Sharon, Dr. Lee said she is going to be staying longer since he thinks bone might be infected. So I asked for transfer and he said he will arrange for it. If inpatient admission, it's better we do children's since it's covered." Wesley says, "Yep." Then Sini says, "It makes sense why her bones break and why her arms and legs are bent." At another point, Wesley texts Sini and says, "Wonder if they will find any more defects." Sini responds, "Get ready. She has some metabolic disorder too." Wesley writes, "Don't let them run any more tests. We'll end up paying."
Again, I'm sure the defense will have an explanation, but from your reading of this, do you see any level of care, concern, panic, urgency, anything at all?
No.
Shortly after this conversation with Sini, Wesley sent out a text message to their close family and friends that said, "Please pray for Sharon as she is not well and is admitted at Children's Medical Center."
Let me ask you this. On any of the texts to Sini, did he ever say we need to pray for Sharon?
No.
But yet, to his friends there on his WhatsApp message, what's he doing?
He's trying to throw out the prayer chain to get people to pray for Sharon.
Right. So if we don't run a cell extraction, the outside world thinks he's asking for prayers. Oh, it's so terrible. But we know what he was communicating with his wife when his daughter was in the hospital with septic joint, something horrible, right?
Correct.
Prosecutor Fine told the court that when inmates send or receive letters, prosecutors can make copies of them. They can also listen to jail calls. He asked Detective Diaz how many times Wesley mentioned Sharon in any of his letters while he sat in jail. Detective Diaz said zero. In a letter he wrote to Sini on October 9th, 2018, close to the one-year anniversary of Sharon's death, he also doesn't mention Sharon at all.
He doesn't mention Sharon one time, right?
Correct.
Doesn't say, "Oh my God, it's been a year, I feel so horrible," or "I miss Sharon," even, right?
Correct.
Even if he's not admitting guilt, he could just say, "I miss my daughter, it's been a year," right?
Correct.
Doesn't do that. But what he is talking about are things like recipes, right?
Yes.
And he's talking about, in State 72, I'll read directly from it, "I did the add-up puzzle, poetry, interesting, I use a brown folded up to cover the mattress and the blanket, I use extra socks and sleeves when it gets cold, I always wear socks and shoes inside the cell, I get wrecked 2 or 3 times a week." He goes on and starts talking about 2 new favorite recipes from me. The lime chili soup packet. Open the seasoning a bit and put a small quantity in 2 cups. Maybe 5 ounces. It tasted delicious. Just like the pho soup. Okay, next. I bought tortillas from commissary and on and on and on, right?
Correct.
Talking about what he trades in there, that he can trade some sort of waffle for 2 envelopes, right?
Correct.
All kinds of nonsense. Would you agree with me?
Yes.
And this is essentially on the 1-year anniversary of Sharon's death.
Yes.
Prosecutor Fine pointed out that the reality is they will never know how Sharon died.
We talked about the evidence that was destroyed, mainly being Sharon, right?
Yes.
As well as any clothes that he may have washed, correct?
Yes.
As well as his multiple delays, correct?
Yes.
Did you ever find any of his stories to be credible?
No.
Detective Diaz said that in everything he has looked at, Wesley has shown no remorse for what he did. Thomas Tedder, a special agent with the FBI, testified that he examined Wesley's iPhone. He noted that on Saturday, October 7th at 3:50 a.m., Wesley stopped sharing location services with Sini. Dr. Susan Dakill, a pediatrician who cared for Sharon, testified that Sharon had 5 broken bones in the 8 months before her death, including an elbow fracture in September 2016, a broken tibia and femur between September 2016 and January 2017, and 2 broken shoulder bones. She made a call to CPS to report it, and CPS investigated but ended up clearing them. But perhaps one of the state's strongest witnesses was the medical examiner, who testified that although they don't have a cause of death, it would be impossible for a child to choke on milk the way Wesley said Sharon had. The defense called friends of the Matthews family to the stand to testify about what they saw with regard to Wesley as a father. One of their friends is a physician at an urgent care center. She testified that she knew Wesley through church for about 8 years. She said he and Sini were looking forward to adopting Sharon.
We had previously heard that they were going to adopt a child, so we were kind of following the story of how they went to India and brought the child back. They sent us some pictures of them while they were in India with a child on their laps, and just to give us a picture of what she looked like. When they finally arrived, I saw Sharon first at church. She was a very small girl, very tiny in size for her age. She's very cute. She did have one little, I guess one eye was a little bit smaller than the other, but she was just a perfectly otherwise formed little girl. She was very shy, I would say, at the beginning, always kind of clinging to either mom or dad, and didn't really interact much with any of us at church. She was kind of just checking us out.
Although Sharon was shy at first, she said she then started blossoming, and she noticed a remarkable change in her.
He was a proud father, I believe.
Was he a protective father?
Yes.
Was he a conscientious father of his children?
Yes, I believe so.
On cross, she said she knew Sharon had some difficulties with feeding, but wasn't a difficult child. She was asked how many times in 8 years she went over to the Matthews house. She said 3 times. Now, earlier, during the state's case, one of the detectives testified that when looking through the house, they didn't see any photos of Sharon.
Did you ever notice that there wasn't a single picture of Sharon up in their house during those 3 visits?
I went to their house, usually for like a short visit. I know that there were pictures on the walls, but I don't know. I didn't look to see exactly who the picture. I mean, I know there are pictures on the walls, but I didn't look in every room to see whose pictures and all of that.
Okay. Do you have any children, Dr. Thomas?
Yes, I do.
How many children do you have?
We have three children.
Do you have pictures of all three children throughout your house?
Mainly in the family room, but not all throughout the house.
Okay, but what I'm saying is you have pictures of each of your three children, correct?
Yes.
You don't just have pictures of one or the second or the third. You have all your children displayed, right?
Yes.
Because you love them all equally,
yes.
Right?
She agreed that you don't always know what happens behind closed doors. Then Prosecutor Fine asked her a hypothetical question.
Let me just ask you this. Hypothetically, if somebody, let's say they didn't even kill their child. Let's say they watched their child die, okay? Watched their child die in front of them. Decided to put that child in a garbage bag, put him in the back of their truck with other trash, then take the body of their child out of that trash bag, crawl into a sewer, and leave the body in a sewer. Lie to police for a couple weeks to the point where that body decomposes so badly there aren't any organs left in the body of their child. Alright, you following me on the hypothetical so far?
Yes.
What do you think should happen to that person who committed that horrible crime?
I don't know exactly what happened, but that person is not anyone that I used to know or had any acquaintance with. I cannot reconcile those two people. One that would have done that with one that I knew.
Well, let me just ask you this, because I just said from a hypothetical stance, okay? Hypothetically, you agree with me that person should receive the maximum punishment. Don't you agree? Hypothetically.
I would say that whatever is according to the law.
Another friend of Wesley's testified that he was one of the first church family members to welcome Sharon to the U.S. when they first brought her home.
So when they first came, the family was had been praying for it. They asked the church to pray for the adoption. We had a party. Initially, Sharon was extremely shy. She clung to her father very closely. She couldn't speak the language, didn't understand anything. And slowly, Wesley enabled her to become more comfortable with their surroundings and their environments. He'd sort of slowly distance himself, making sure she became comfortable, all the way to the point where, given her background and what we knew about her, she became a real favorite amongst our young kids, and they'd just be chasing her around all the place, you know, looking, wanting to be the one next to Sharon. And Wesley was involved in those processes. But I also saw Wesley, from a parent's perspective, doing what I would expect a parent to do with their child.
He said he knew about their trouble with feeding her and knew they were working with her on it. He was asked if he knows that Wesley pleaded guilty to injury to a child by omission. He said he understands.
The most important thing that I want you to know is we were all completely shocked. Given the Wesley that we knew, what transpired after that, and what has been revealed recently, is completely shocking to us.
He described Wesley as a protective, loving, and caring father and husband. But on cross, he was asked what his understanding of what Wesley did was.
I've just heard it from the newspapers.
What have you heard?
What I've heard is that he called the police after a few hours. At that point in time, the child was missing on the tree. Then he went and had a meeting with the police after that, and I believe he confessed. That's what I've heard.
What did he confess to?
I'm not sure.
Wesley's older brother testified about Wesley, too. He said Wesley and Sini have watched their kids before, and he wouldn't have any reservations about them watching his kids again. And then the defense called Wesley to the stand. The first thing he said was that he wanted to apologize to the police officers who worked on the case. He said after listening to their testimonies in court, he realized the amount of work they had done.
Please, please find it in your hearts to forgive me. I wanted to know that I detest myself. I detest myself for being untruthful to police officers. I admire and I cherish the work that police officers do every single day. They put on their uniforms and they kiss their loved ones and they get to work, putting their lives on line to protect people like me. And it pains and saddens me knowing that I was untruthful to them.
He told the jury that he and Sini wanted to have a big family, but they were dealing with fertility issues, so they decided to adopt. As for what happened on the night of October 6th going into the 7th, he said he had just taken his shower for the night and went to the master bedroom. Sini and their other daughter were already in the bed, and Sharon was in her crib. As he was getting into bed, he said his mind was thinking about all the things he had to do for work the following day. He could hear Sharon tossing and turning in her bed, which surprised him. Usually, she falls asleep right away. He looked at her and saw her looking at him. He got her from the crib and they went out into the hallway. He got her bottle from the kitchen with fresh milk. He started doing things around the house for a bit and then checked on her. She still hadn't finished her milk. He told her she has to hurry up so they can go back to sleep. She nodded. A little while passed and she still wasn't done. He told the jury that Sharon was underweight, and the emphasis was on them as parents to make sure she eats a lot of calories. He said Sharon's doctors and feeding therapist stressed the amount of milk she needed to drink each day. He said CPS had investigated them for months before, and they were cleared of any wrongdoing, but they were always afraid that CPS would be brought back. He decided to take Sharon into the garage since he had just cleaned it out. He said he wanted to show her the new lawnmower he had purchased. He said she had a fascination with them and thought it might help her to finish her milk. He got her comfortable there, and then he started to get sleepy. He woke up from dozing off and saw Sharon holding her bottle with the straw in her mouth. But he noticed she wasn't drinking it. He told her to hurry up and finish her milk. He said it came out much louder than he expected, and it startled her. He said she started crying and choking and coughing. He picked her up and rubbed her back. But the coughing wasn't subsiding. It was getting worse. He said he called out to his wife and tried to comfort Sharon. At one point, he felt that he couldn't control her coughing, so he laid her on the floor. He said her breathing had gotten heavier. He said he again tried to call his wife and tried shaking Sharon, but nothing was working. Her head then came to a still.
You understand that the information you're sharing with the ladies and gentlemen of the jury now is different. You're adding more than what you've told the police back in Richardson in late October. You understand that?
Yes, sir.
And you're... what you're saying is what happened, you did not go into that type of detail back on the 23rd?
Yes, sir.
At some point, does Sharon become lifeless?
Yes, sir. I check her pulse. I check her pulse on her left arm. I try to listen to her pulse. I don't hear anything.
He said he checked for a pulse and tried CPR. As for why he didn't go get his wife, who was a nurse. He said from his understanding, he didn't want to waste any time. He wanted to keep doing CPR. That's why he didn't call 911 either. At some point, however, he said he realized his efforts had failed.
When your efforts failed, why didn't you pick up a phone, go into the house, scream, yell, do something?
I was way too shocked by what had happened. I could not absorb what had happened. I could not believe that. In very quick time, my child had gone from me, and I was just stunned by the whole thing, and I was literally paralyzed.
He told the jury that he sat there and prayed. He said he had intense fear and didn't know what to do. He said if CPS found out, they would come and destroy his house, and he didn't want Sini to see Sharon in that condition. After some time, he said he realized he would need to find a place to put Sharon's body.
I wanted to look for ways or places where I can safely keep my child's body. And even anywhere in my house, my wife or Shayna would see Sharon, and then they would be completely devastated. So I wanted to find a place where I could place my child's body. And I wanted it to be somewhere where I can see from my house. So I went inside the house. And I got my phone, because I knew that if Sidi wakes up, she's going to start looking at her phone and start trying to see where I am, and she might panic. So I turned up location services to Sidi's phone, and then I walked to the utility room. I wanted a way to take my child's body, and the only thought that came into my mind was to put my child's body in a blue bag. So I got a blue bag and placed my child's body in there.
He drove around and decided to put her body in a culvert. He said he was still thinking there would somehow be a chance she would come back to him.
I refused to believe that my child had completely gone from this world. I believe that if I pray hard and strong enough, that God would bring my child back. I believe that the Lord God who brought Lazarus out of the tomb after 4 days can bring my children back to me.
He said he stayed there for a bit, that he was hoping a snake would come and bite him. Wesley's attorney showed a video of Wesley and Sharon when he met her for the first time in India. Sharon was sitting on his lap and he was lovingly holding her hands and talking to her. Another video showed Sharon at a birthday party, and Wesley can be seen helping her sing and dance with the other kids.
My God is so big, so strong and so mighty, there's nothing my God cannot do.
Yet another video showed Wesley and Sini helping Sharon with her words. Would it be fair to say you loved and cared for Sharon? His attorney asked. Very much so, he replied. He agreed that he was a protector of his family, but that on that day he failed Sharon and his family. He said he feels angry at himself and at God. He said it's not fair that his heart still beats and his child's heart does not. If he could do it all over again, he said he absolutely would. He said if he could tell Sharon anything, he would tell her that he's sorry and that he just wanted to be with her. After his attorney passed the witness, Wesley took a tissue and dabbed at his eyes. On cross-examination, prosecutor Jason Fine pointed out that the story he gave to the police and now to the court is not consistent. Wesley said he doesn't agree. Prosecutor Fine asked how many times Wesley has fed Sharon milk in the middle of the night, and Wesley estimated maybe about every couple of weeks, so about 25 times in the year that he had Sharon.
So let's say by my math that's 25 times that this happened, right?
That's pretty likely, sir.
Okay, now you never told anybody this before, but I guess we'll just take your word for it that this has happened 25 times before. Now, of those 25 times, how many other times did she choke on milk?
Zero.
Zero. But yet, this night was the night that she choked on milk, correct?
Yes, sir.
How many times throughout the course of the 15 months that you were her father, how many times did she choke on milk?
Just that night, sir.
Just that night.
Right.
What a coincidence, huh?
Well, it's unfortunate, sir.
It was unfortunate, wasn't it?
Prosecutor Fine told him that the tone of his story changed yesterday when he testified on direct.
I don't know how it changed.
Well, because on October 7th, which that story was full lies, because you never put her out by the tree or did any of those things, correct?
And I was the first one to admit that.
Well, congratulations. You were the first one to admit that after God knows how many people have been looking for
your daughter to be committed and badgering the witness, Your Honor.
It's the same.
Ask the jury to disregard, Your Honor.
Members of the jury, the court's already given you your instructions regarding rulings on objection. State, next question.
All right. In your previous statements, you had said that you were getting frustrated with her because she wasn't drinking her milk, correct?
More on the lines of being upset, sir.
Okay. You were upset. You mentioned that it was a battle of wills. You mentioned that. Do you remember saying that?
Battle of wills. I may have said that.
Yesterday, you said that you had pretty much fallen asleep in the garage, right? You kind of nodded off for a second?
I nodded off. I don't know for how long.
All right. Never mentioned that to the police, did you?
I don't recall my exact voice at the police.
All right. And when you woke up, you noticed that Sharon still hadn't finished her milk, correct?
That is correct.
So how long had this been going on for at this point?
I don't know. I don't know. No exact time, sir.
All right. And so you got angry with her because she hadn't finished her milk, correct?
I had just woken out of my sleep and saw that she was not drinking her milk, so I yelled at her.
Okay, when you yell at somebody, is it out of happiness or anger?
It doesn't have to be out of anger all the time.
All right. Well, we'll just say that you yelled at her.
Yes, sir.
Somehow your yelling at her caused her to then start choking on the milk that you said she wasn't even drinking at the time, correct?
Well, she had her bottle and her straw in her mouth. And she had a little bit of milk in her mouth, so she tried to swallow it. She was startled, and she heard my yell. And the startling caused her to swallow and cry at the same time.
Okay. So she had a little bit of milk in her mouth. You yelled at her, startled her, and then the choking process started, correct?
I don't know how much milk was there in her mouth.
You just said she had a little bit of milk in her mouth. You said that 8 seconds ago.
That was your word, sir. Said she had milk in her mouth.
Okay. Boy, maybe I'm sleep deprived.
Prosecutor Fine continued pointing out inconsistencies with Wesley's past statements.
You know, one thing you didn't mention yesterday that you had mentioned before is Sharon vomiting. Right? Did Sharon vomit throughout the day on October 6th?
Yes, she did.
Right. She vomited at some point where it was just all over her clothes, correct?
In the morning, yes, sir.
In the morning?
Yes, sir.
Had she ever vomited like that before?
Yes.
Was it your custom then to throw away those clothes?
The clothes are tight-fitting, and she has outgrown the clothes, and there's no need to wash it and keep it again, so...
Prosecutor Fine brought up Dr. Daykel's testimony about Sharon's broken bones.
You were her father during those times, correct?
Yes, sir.
It was under your watch that she had a broken arm, correct?
Elbow injury, sir.
Broken, whatever you want to call it. She had an arm injury, correct?
Yes, sir.
Under your watch.
Yes, sir.
She had a broken tibia under your watch, correct?
Wrong.
She had a broken femur under your watch, correct?
Wrong.
And she had two broken shoulder bones under your watch, correct?
Wrong.
Prosecutor Fine asked if their other daughter slept with them in their bed, and he said yes.
Sharon slept separate, correct?
Next to me in the crib.
All right. Next to you at the crib. All right. Not in the bed, though, right?
There's no space for all four of us to be in the same bed.
Well, yes, you got the short end of the stick there. It was Sharon, huh?
Actually, that's the best place for Sharon. That's where she liked to sleep.
Well, she's not here to answer for that, is she?
Unfortunately, she's not.
He asked Wesley if he ever mentioned Sharon in any of the letters he wrote from jail. Wesley said he did, multiple times.
I guess they're the ones that we didn't get, I guess, right? Another coincidence. But all the letters we got that are in evidence, and I'm not going to read every single word because that's up for the jury to decide. If they want to read every single word, that's fine. But we value their time. You would agree with me on that, correct?
Yes, sir.
And so if they want to look at every single one of those letters, they can see if you mentioned Sharon one time. Do you agree with me on that?
Those may be letters you handpicked out of a bunch and you keep it for your records.
Okay.
When Prosecutor Fine pointed out that Wesley had put Sharon inside a trash bag, Wesley argued that it wasn't a trash bag.
And then your first reaction was to put Sharon in a trash bag, correct?
I wouldn't call it a trash bag, sir.
What?
I would not call that a trash bag.
What would you call it?
It's a blue bag.
You're at your house.
Yes, sir.
There's bedding, right?
There's what?
Bedding, there's sheets, there's blankets, there's all kinds of stuff. If you want to go and dump your daughter, that's on you. But the way that you handled it was putting her in a trash bag.
I've never used that for trash, ever.
What do you use the bag for?
It was never used.
Prosecutor Fine pulled out one of their exhibits and held it up to Wesley.
Mr. Matthews, this is State 68. Is this the exact type of bag that you put Sharon in?
Yes, sir.
What do you call this?
It's a blue bag.
This is a blue bag?
Yes, sir.
What do you put in this blue bag? What do you put in this blue bag, generally, besides your daughter?
I've never used it before.
Prosecutor Fine then asked why he put her in a culvert. Wesley responded that he wanted to be there with her.
You wanted to be with her in the culvert?
Yes, sir.
How long did you hang out at the culvert with your daughter?
I don't know exactly, but I was there with my daughter for some time.
How long?
I didn't have a watch with me, and there's no way for me to say exactly how long.
Well, this is new information we haven't heard before either, that you were hanging out with your daughter in the culvert, right?
I stated that yesterday.
I'm sorry. You're right. You did state that yesterday. So that was the first time we heard that. So you stayed in the culvert. Didn't you say yesterday you stayed in the culvert because you were waiting for snakes to come and bite you?
It was dark inside the culvert, so I eagerly went in so that some snake would be there and my life would end right there.
Okay. But there just weren't any snakes around to kill you at that point, huh?
Unfortunately, no, sir.
So after a while, at what point do you decide these snakes aren't going to come and kill me? I'm going to go back home. When does that happen?
After some time.
All right, well, we know you left your house at 4:19. You got back at 4:53. So we're talking about 34 minutes, correct?
I don't know, sir.
All right. So you couldn't have spent, even by your own words, as you're sitting in the culvert or laying in the culvert with your daughter who you just killed, you couldn't have been in there more than a few minutes. Is that fair to say?
That's a wrong statement, sir.
All right. Well, how long were you in the culvert for? 6 hours?
I don't know, sir.
All right. At some point, you realize the snakes aren't going to come and kill me, right? Right?
Yes, sir.
So you go back home, and you decide to do some laundry at that point, right?
I wanted to clean my clothes.
You wanted to clean your clothes, yeah. Because you want to cover up what you've done, correct?
I did not want Sidney to see me in my dirty clothes.
Prosecutor Fine asked about how Wesley said on direct that it wasn't fair that his heart was still beating when Sharon's heart was not.
That was my complaint to God.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. How about you just sign up for a life sentence right now, we all go home, and you make things as fair as they can be. You want to do that? You want to say that you'll take a life sentence and we can all go home?
I leave that to the jury to decide.
Because words are cheap, aren't they?
No, sir.
No, because when push comes to shove, and I just gave you the opportunity to say, you know what, we're going to make this fair, I'm going to spend the rest of my life in prison, you said, I'm going to leave that up to the jury, right? You're going to force them to do that to you, aren't you?
Because I believe the jury will have time to have listened to everything.
Yeah. You're going to put them in that situation, right? You're not going to take that life sentence, are you?
If that's what the jury wants to give me, I'm more than happy to take it.
Prosecutor Fine then said that he would give him one last chance to tell the truth about what happened to Sharon.
I'm going to give you one last chance. You going to tell us what happened to Sharon? What really happened to Sharon?
I already stated what happened to my daughter, Sharon.
In their closing arguments, prosecutors said that Sharon had been abused the entire time she lived in the U.S., pointing to her broken bones and the fact that Dr. Dakill had even called CPS. 3 months later, Sharon was dead. They said the Wesley Matthews his friends from church and his family know is not the real Wesley.
The real Wesley Matthews is the father that buried her in this culvert. This is where she was buried. After 3 short years in this country, she ends up in a culvert, not a quarter of a mile away from his house. So for all the man hours, Detective Diaz talked about that. They had FBI, they had Garland, they had Richardson, they had so many other agencies coming in, all these men and women. They're searching frantically, hoping to find this little girl alive. And he's lying every single day. He knows exactly where she is, and he knows exactly what's happening. She's rotting in that culvert.
Wesley's attorney told the jury that sometimes we make decisions and have to live with the consequences for the rest of our lives, and that that's something Wesley is going to have to live with for the rest of his life.
He's also a man that's before you with no criminal history. Now, we're not here to ask for probation. I'm not here to insult your intelligence. Let's make that point clear. But I think it's important for you to understand there is that full range of punishment. And I'm going to want you to start at the beginning and work your way till you get to that point where you think justice is served.
The jury decided that Wesley's punishment should be life in prison with the possibility of parole after 30 years. Wesley Matthews has since tried to appeal that decision, saying that he deserves a new trial because the jury was, quote, exposed to emotionally charged testimony and photos of Sharon's badly decomposed body that would have unfairly upset them. But in February 2021, the appeals court in Texas decided it would not hear his case. And that's all for this episode. As always, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this case. Let me know by joining the conversation on Instagram at Court Junkie, by tweeting me at Court Junkie Pod, or by emailing me at podcast@courtjunkie.com. If you'd like to hear these episodes without the ads and hear additional Court Junkie bonus episodes, check out my Patreon options at courtjunkie.com/support. And be sure to subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/courtjunkie. And one last thing before I go. I have 2 more television appearances coming up that I'm pretty excited about. One will be on Wednesday, June 30th. I'll be on Court Cam Presents Under Oath on the A&E channel, and we'll be discussing the Henry Segura case. And to anybody who knows me, you know that this is a case that I love talking about. And then on July 5th, I'll be on a show called Infamy on VH1, and that one will be covering the Adam and Samara Frosch case. And for those who missed it, I was also on Court Cam Presents Under Oath on A&E a few weeks ago discussing the Todd Kendhammer trial. Some highlights from that show are on the Court Junkie Instagram, and I believe you can find reruns of the show on A&E as well as on their website. So check those out if you want, and thanks again for listening. Until next time. A new podcast featuring two journalists with over 30 years investigating experience, asking direct questions many don't think to ask. Kelly McLear and Melissa McCarty are committed to finding the stories, crimes, mysteries, and the murders that those before just couldn't uncover. They want to deliver not only the truth, but to provide justice for those deeply affected. This isn't true crime from afar. These two are out there, traveling the country, hitting the streets, so you can hear it from the victim, their loved ones, experts, law enforcement, and even the killers themselves. Their podcast is Killer Genes, G-E-N-E-S. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts.